Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. I'm the Rosetta Stone of healthcare. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. I'm fortunate. Today, my health and well-being attention goes to function and spirit. My constellation of symptoms are seriously annoying, but manageable. I can afford to focus on strength, balance, mobility, and of course, rest. Put another way, my medical concerns are relatively stable. On with quality of life. A couple of weeks ago, I published my conversation with Keith Puri, my chiropractor. Here I chat with Darlene Harrier, my physical therapist. Darlene works in the outpatient department of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. I began working with her shortly after I was diagnosed. She was the first referral from my neurologist. I have more talks scheduled with other members of my team. They support me well. I'm grateful.
Darlene, I'm delighted to be talking to you. I think the world of you, and you have helped me and continue to help me so much. I think about you often, actually every other day while I am doing my routine. So this morning, when I was doing my routine, I was thinking about, well, this is from Darlene.
Yeah.
How do you introduce yourself in a social situation?
In a social situation, I am very informal usually, just introduce myself with my first name to make it more personal and make that more intimate connection with the individual. I don't identify in a social situation as a physical therapist unless I feel that the person is interested in knowing that.
Okay. So then how about in a professional situation?
Back to the social situation.
Sure.
So if someone is interested in knowing what I do for work, then I will explain that I work as a physical therapist, treating those with neurological conditions, particularly as an outpatient physical therapist. Also introduce myself as being a physical therapist as a clinical specialist in neurologic physical therapy.
How did that end up being your specialty? How did you get there? Did you know right away?
Well, actually, it was a gradual process. It was basically what I was exposed to. I worked in an acute rehab center early on in my career. I was a physical therapist assistant before I went back to school. Mm-hmm. I had the good fortune of working with amazing physical therapists in an acute rehab center in Michigan, where I'm from.
Which one?
Mary Freebed.
Okay. I worked, my first job while I was in nursing school was at the Detroit Rehabilitation Institute.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Anyway, you were at an acute rehab facility.
Of course, in an acute rehab facility back in the early 80s, patients stayed months and even longer following a spinal cord injury.
Right.
It was basically pre-physical therapy training for me that I was able to work with these very complicated cases as an assistant.
Yeah.
And learn how the progression of illness
mm-hmm.
and rehabilitation can be.
Mm-hmm.
I moved on from that. I went to physical therapy school in Boston, and I worked in an acute hospital setting for those years while I was going to PT school, and found that there were no therapists in the hospital who actually felt confident in treating patients with neurological conditions. And even though I was a new grad, by the time I finished PT school, I was the one who eagerly took the patient, the neurological.
And you were filling a vacuum.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yes, so starting on inpatients, I became quickly the leader on the neurological floor. And also I was in the neonatal intensive care unit.
Okay.
I was the only physical therapist who had any experience working in pediatrics.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, I'm talking like 1 year out of school. I was
And you were priceless.
Yeah. You know, realizing.
It's all relative, isn't it? Expertise.
That's right.
You knew a little bit more than everybody else around you. So you were the expert.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, it was like more hands-on training and not the, you know, research background.
Right.
But
yeah. Where were you when you first realized health was fragile?
Believe it or not, I was very young when I realized that health was fragile. Probably as young as soon as I was able to make memories, because I was born with a congenital orthopedic defect.
Okay.
I was born with basically the lower half of my right leg missing. Yeah.
Wow.
My fibula was missing.
Okay.
That created was one leg, my right leg, shorter than the left.
Mm-hmm.
And also my ankle was unstable.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're missing the fibula, you don't have a full ankle.
Right.
And in some cases.
So fibula is the thin bone that pairs up with the femur.
The tibia down below.
Oh, the femur is above. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I just was orienting my listeners, but clearly I needed orienting as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, of course. So normally, like the traditional treatment for that is actually amputation below the knee.
Yeah.
And so my parents had to make a decision within months after I was born, whether they were going to have my leg amputated or embark on this new treatment approach that basically I think wasn't started until the 50s, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It was rather new.
Yeah.
The approach entailed leg lengthening procedures, stunting of the growth of the other leg, and ankle fusion and wearing braces. That was my childhood, every so many years having surgeries performed to correct for this congenital deformity.
Mm-hmm.
And by the age of 15, they were done with all of the surgeries. And I actually was able to graduate out of a brace. I had like a full length leg brace up until then, walking with a limp. I still had a 2-inch leg length discrepancy, which was less than it would have been, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I realized at that time that if I wanted to walk better, it was up to me.
Yeah.
To figure it out. And I don't know what came over me that I just said, no, I'm not going to put up with this.
Yeah.
Something was not right. I just knew I could do better. And mind you, I never had physical therapy.
Right.
I knew about physical therapists. Right. The surgeon told my parents what they had to do.
Oh, I see. And so all those years you didn't go to a physical therapist. How interesting.
Oh, right. Right.
Wow.
So it was at that time that I realized, as I say, it was up to me. And I didn't even think about being a physical therapist until sometime maybe by the time I graduated high school, obviously, I went into physical therapy assistant school first because I didn't have the confidence that I could be a physical therapist. I wanted to be a music therapist and realized that I didn't have the extroversion for that. And so quickly, came up with plan B. I always wanted to work in a hospital. And loved being in the hospital after all those surgeries. I thought it was exciting. I wanted to see what was going on behind the scenes. And
So that's, so you really came into this honestly, didn't you? I mean, in hindsight, it just makes so much sense. One of the things that I make it a point to tell people when I talk about my physical therapist, who is you, is that although I started seeing you 10 or more years ago, I don't know that I've seen you more than 10 times. We started out with a brief flurry as you did your assessment and you started me on a program. And then it was pretty much I've come to you either for a tune-up or I've progressed and I've fallen. I remember the time I fell and I couldn't get up and I was all freaked out. And I came and you taught me how to get up off the ground, you know, using what I had. And then when, you know, I went from one cane wasn't really doing it and I was thinking about a walker and you put me to, you know, having two canes and how to do that. I need an expert when I need an expert and then I'll do the work. And, you know, I don't need to keep seeing you every day or every week or every month. But I'm wondering when in treating progressive and neurological conditions, what are the patterns of care or of treatment that you find yourself in? Do you have people like me that you see, you know, for 10 years over, you know, time?
Yes, absolutely. That is the practice model. Of physical therapy in treating those with neurodegenerative disorders. Because it's a chronic condition that never goes away. And it, you know, the goal is, of course, to keep you as functional, as strong, independent forever for the rest of your life. In any way possible. And so and the condition never goes away, unfortunately. But there are ways to help slow down the rate of progression and even make, you know, little small improvements intermittently, you know, if you backslide. It can bring you back to where you were recently.
Tune-up. That's what I was referring to as a tune-up.
So in conditions such as those with multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's, there are people I've been seeing for, in some cases, I've got patients with Parkinson's for 20 years. I've been seeing intermittently. And you know, I've got people I see like every 3 to 6 months, like clockwork. And others, I might not see them for a couple of years. But they always seem, you know, they come back and it's, and that's how it should be.
And well, so, actually, I confess that a few years ago, I tried another physical therapist. I just thought, okay, what would it be like going to a different physical therapist and would they have something different to offer that might be helpful? And it was not an successful experiment. You know, I immediately canceled any subsequent appointment and made an appointment with you. And it was, as expected, wonderful. But, you know, I every once in a while, I like to experiment. But the person clearly had no idea what he was doing with somebody with a neurological and a chronic problem. It was completely, totally acute care focused. Temporary, see somebody for 10 visits and then they're done. And he could not get into what I needed and what you did for me was you helped me develop life habits. These are things to do to maintain your balance, your strength, your mobility. These are the things to think about in terms of safety. And if this happens, I want to see you again. He didn't have any of that.
Yes.
It was just absent.
Right. Well, the thing is that in these types of conditions, we're looking at how to measure function. And for example, the way to know whether someone has had a decline in their function is to measure things like walking speed, mm-hmm. balance, or do an objective functional mobility questionnaire mm-hmm. that I can look at over time. Mm-hmm. You know, each time you come in, I retest your walking speed, for example,
right.
and your balance.
Right.
And then we can look at what was it, how did you function 2 years ago, and how are you functioning now compared right. to that? What is it that is causing that change, and how can we make that better? Is it, even if it's, are there exercises that we didn't implement previously that could right. be implemented, or changing a current exercise program, or adding assistive devices? And so all of, you know, those are ways that we use to track progress and provide the interventions as needed.
Now a word about our sponsor, Abridge. Use Abridge when you see your physical therapist. I get lots of instructions then. Push the pink button and record the conversation with your doctor or your therapist. Read the transcript or listen to clips when you get home. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com. Or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your healthcare conversations. Let me know how it went.
You know, I'm an activated, self-motivated person. I don't need encouragement to do the routine that we set up every other day. And I was thinking this morning when I got done, I just had pleasure from I could do it. You know, yeah. and that in I'm maintaining those things that are at risk, and then I'm getting stronger. You gave me a set of upper body work to do. Those areas are getting stronger. And so I feel like it's its own motivation.
Right.
But I imagine that part of your work is working with people to develop routines, because it's the daily work, or for me, the every other daily work. That's the thing, you know, it isn't like coming to see you every 6 months. It's right. doing stuff every day.
Exactly.
So how do you approach that dilemma of helping people build routines?
Right. That's the thing I have to consider with every single person, is to try to figure out what could be potentially their barrier to exercise. Some people have a history of exercise and have always enjoyed exercise. Some mm-hmm. people have never exercised and probably am not going to change their behavior mm-hmm. now in this new condition they have. So I have to instill some confidence that exercise can actually help them improve, mm-hmm. that they can either stave off functional decline mm-hmm. if they were to do the exercise, or feel better if they were to do the exercise. And just find, some people are just, they're working and they don't have time to make the time to exercise. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so it's about finding strategies for each person, what can be helpful. So, for example, myself, mm-hmm. I I live 2 miles from work. Mm-hmm. So I have made it my priority that for me to get in my exercise, I have to use my commute.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right.
And
so then you walk to work every day and home.
I walk to work every day and back home again.
Okay.
And for, you know, so I try to think of ways for individuals who, as I say, who, if they're working and they say, I don't have time to exercise. I barely get through my day. And, you know, if I can help identify for them something they can do throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know that you don't have to dedicate an entire half an hour at once. You can break it up into 5 minute walks a few times a day, several times a day, and it all adds up.
Do you think about helping people with small wins so that there's some bite-sized thing that they can do, so then they can feel like, okay, well, I did that for a minute. Maybe I can do it for 2 minutes or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay.
So starting with whatever they can succeed at in doing, and then helping them understand how they can progress gradually on their own.
So in my program, I use a combination of what you've taught me, and then I have a really good chiropractor. And I feel like what he does is sometimes he fine tunes stuff. So for example, I've seen him as long as I've seen you. And so when I first went to you, he asked, so what's your routine? So I demonstrated, I mean, I didn't do the whole half hour. I did, you know, I just showed him it, and he goes, oh, that's perfect. That's just perfect. I only have one suggestion, and it was do it in your bare feet.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And you know, because he wanted to get the soles of my feet to my brain connection. Yes. You know, so he just added that one little thing at the beginning. But what I liked, number one, was that he was so encouraging. Like he said, oh, you got a great physical therapist. This is perfect. And I like that he was reinforcing.
Right.
It made sense. I feel like I can do the balance stuff a lot better in bare feet after maybe a few months.
Yeah.
My question in that story is, do you find that people who have chronic lifelong things, so they probably have a team of people. And so do you find that there's synergy and resistance from other members of the professional team that you have to deal with?
Oh, I have never perceived any resistance. Oh. I think that, well, I'm very accustomed to working in an interdisciplinary team approach.
Okay.
With patients anyway, and particularly because in treating those with neurological conditions, it does take a team.
It does. No kidding.
It's, you know, you can't just see one provider is not enough.
Right.
And not even, you know, a neurologist and physical therapist for, you know, it takes, you
right.
know.
Yeah. I got six specialists and, you know, acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, meditation.
Well,
there's a whole team.
That if an average person with no disease finds benefit in seeing somebody for manual therapy intermittently throughout their life, that it would be, you know, even much more appreciated and beneficial by someone who's having motor control issues or postural changes because of lack of strength. And it's a big help. It can really help facilitate movement.
Is there anything you'd like to ask me?
Yeah. How are you doing with your music?
My music is going very well. I'm playing in a Latin band now.
Right.
And I am way over my head. and I've never played Latin music before, and I haven't been that familiar, but I got invited to play, and I turned them down the first time. And then I thought, I've always wanted to be part of a horn section.
Yeah.
And so, and they have an alto sax, a trombone, and a trumpet. It's like the exercises. It's one foot in front of the other, good daily habits, and I'm slowly learning. I like the music. I'm really good at what I do professionally, and yeah. I've had a career where I've been really good at what I do, not so much music. It's a good, humbling experience.
Yes, and that's going out of your usual environment, right?
It is. And it's good. It's good for me. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but Dr. Kinkle said that when he found out that I was playing the baritone saxophone, he said, I got nothing in my toolbox that's better than you playing the saxophone. First of all, you're inflating your chest fully.
Right.
Because he said you have intercostal involvement. You have dexterity issues, and you're playing this big horn.
Yes.
And it's creating new brain pathways, and it's lifting your spirits.
Exactly.
And he said, I got nothing. Compared to that, I got nothing. You keep playing the saxophone. That's the best thing you can do.
He is right. That is true.
I just think that was great.
Yes. You know, what's interesting is in my work with those with Parkinson's in particular, that is one strategy also to get them to exercise is joining singing groups.
Yeah, if not dancing.
And dancing, exactly. Yeah. Right. So it definitely is, it's the way to live fully with disease.
Yeah. I so appreciate that you've taken the time to chat with me.
Well, I am honored, as I say. I am happy to be on your healthcare team.
Yeah. And thank you.
And happy to see you thriving.
Yes. Yeah, I'm thriving, no doubt about it. What the heck, you know?
Yes.
I might as well. All right. Well, take care, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah, I was going to say, when do I see you next?
I ought to make an appointment, and we'll, again, take stock, do your assessment, and
exactly
continue to point me in a good direction. Thank you for reminding me.
Sure. Well, you're definitely one of the more self-driven who doesn't need appointments every 3 to 6 months to get you track with things, but
well, thank you.
But everyone's
right.
Still good.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You're welcome. You too.
Okay, bye.
Reflecting on my health team, I see that some have a license to access restricted drugs, procedures, and treatments, such as prescription medications, surgery, devices, diagnostic tests, acupuncture. Some excel as expert coaches. They provide information and understanding, roadmaps, guides, and links on the journey towards best health. Some open their hearts, providing love, respect, and gratitude. I subscribe to the notion that best health includes spiritual, mental, and physical health. Strong spiritual health eases the day-to-day challenges of mental and physical health. I see that while they may be on the team for a specific need or service, individually they have unique blends of license, hands-on, coach, and open heart. Darlene Harrier offers all four. Thank you, Darlene.
Several musicians participate in my health team. Some know it, some don't. I've studied with saxophonist Jeff
Harrington for more than 10 years. He understands the challenges of my MS and helps me adapt. I study with him via Zoom. Dan Fox leads the Morningside Studios, the home of more than 20 community ensembles. You can hear an interview with Dan Fox on TPF alumni Gabrielle Pittman's Musicians Can Thrive podcast. Check it out. See the link in the show notes.
See the show notes, previous podcasts, and other resources on my website, www.health-hats.com/pod. Please subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. See you around the block.